Hello, this is Dan the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, Cinema Manager of Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, a film and theatre and podcast maker from the Isle of Mull.
Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet. What's left behind, what's been found that's unexpected, what stories are there to tell. It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger and leave things or bits.
It's been an age since we last recorded. I'm sorry.
That's all
we've,
right.
We are, again, I think last time we recorded possibly...
Was in person. And you had to edit around a fart, I'm really sorry.
I did, and we've just had a big dinner, so I imagine I'll be again. Editing around farts that you did as well.
Sorry.
Yes, we are in person. We're in my house. It is as rare that we're in person as it is that we now record podcasts. So sorry about that.
I'm down in the Kintyre Peninsula after a very brutal power cut after Storm Amy. I stepped outside my door and got blown down here. We had a really brutal storm over the weekend, Storm Amy, and kind of strongest winds people can remember for a very long time. And we had about 60 odd hour power cut, which is extraordinary. And then I was working filming for a project here in the north of Kintyre today, so this gives us a chance to catch up.
Yes.
Which is great.
We've got additional animals to disrupt things. Normally it's just Lyra and Mac, and we've also now got Poppy, who is obsessed with finding Lyra. So I am manhandling a shih tzu.
Yes, yeah.
Which is not as disgusting as it sounds. It's adorable.
It's quite a good zoo.
Yeah.
So, yes, since last we spoke, you've been to Canada.
I've been to Canada, yeah. I've been to see, not exclusively, but partly to see two of our previous guests on this podcast, Michael Terrio at the Shore Festival in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and Emilio Vieira at the Stratford Festival in Stratford.
Fantastic.
Ontario. And I liked it, and it was good.
You said the Shaw Festival, you went to see Major Barbara.
Major Barbara at the Shaw. So I saw several things at the Shaw, but Major Barbara was the absolute standout. I'd never seen it before, a George Bernard Shaw play that I hadn't seen before, but it was superb.
And how were the audience? Were they well behaved?
They were. So I think Emilio spoke about this sort of audience. So it's quite. It's an older crowd. It's a very sort of genteel Canadian older crowd for this particular. Well, certainly for this play and for generally for both festivals. And so there was a bit of what did he say? And some a little bit of that and. Not so much. Major Barbara was fine, but there was, you know, you get the odd phone going off because people don't know how to turn their phones off.
That's universal, yeah.
In fact, at the beginning of one of the plays, at Stratford, they've now, they've sort of started integrating the phone, turning off the phone things into some of the plays. There was a production of Anne of Green Gables, which I saw sort of as a place filler because it was just what was on and I had a slot for it. So I watched that. It was really good.
Anne of Green Gables is a very interesting piece. There's, Ken Campbell, the great theatre director, he had a lot of time for that story. In fact, he used it as kind of stuff about story structure and how of telling a life story can really work really interestingly.
Oh, that's interesting. But it was fine anyway. But part of the... it was sort of the bookends of Anne of Green Gables was that it was a book group, and so the person, somebody came out, an actor came out at the beginning and said, you know, welcome everybody, we're going to read Anne of Green Gables today, and they did a little thing about turn off your phone everybody because we're about to start reading the book, and and they did exactly what Emilio said. Actually, they said if you don't know how to turn off your phone, find somebody under the age of 20 and they'll be able to help you. And it was a sort of whole, and everybody laughed, and then people went, have you turned off your phone? No, I don't know. And so there was a bit of that.
God.
It was good. Major Barbara was the standout of, obviously Michael Terrio was the standout in Anything Goes. Friend of the podcast. Yeah. He was Moonfaced Martin in Anything Goes, and he was very good.
It's interesting, mobile phones and performances are, they're so prevalent, especially when you go and see a music gig. There's people just holding
your phone, yeah. And then,
but like people don't not knowing how to use their phone, and so they're filming things with the flashlight on.
Yes.
And you're like, what? That's just annoying. So I'm actually wearing a t-shirt today, a Peter Gabriel t-shirt from when he played Glasgow a couple of years ago. I was lucky enough to go and see him, and there was a lady and husband, I think partner, sitting in front of us, and she had her flashlight on and she couldn't figure out how to switch off, so I leaned over and said, can I show you how to turn that off? You just press that button there. She said, oh, thank you. Because otherwise it's like, I was going to kill you because that light is too bright.
So I either help you or I murder you.
Yeah, exactly.
Bludgeon
you
to death. So,
yeah.
There wasn't any... There were a couple of phones... there were some phones, but thankfully not at, you know, really major points. I went to see Winter's Tale, and when the statue comes to life, all I could think of, because there had been, I think, two or maybe even three mobile phones prior to that, and so this scene is, you know, complete silence, everybody's transfixed, you're watching the statue come to life, and it goes on for, you know, a good 90 seconds, 2 minutes. And I was just sitting there thinking, please don't, nobody's phone go off now, because that would be so irritating for the actors. I mean, anyway, it didn't.
Good.
My point is,
And you had an adventure whilst going there. Do you want to say about this?
Right. Here's
you don't have to say if you don't want to.
No, here's a public service announcement. If you book a trip to Canada, you need what's called an ETA, which is a visa, ETA. I have one of those. I got one last time I went to Canada. They last for ages. I checked that my visa was in date. It most certainly was. So I went to the airport. Everything was grand. Got on a flight. Got to Iceland. Got stopped at the getting onto my Canada flight because apparently I didn't have a visa. Me, confident, brings out my visa on my phone. As I'm handing my visa over, I realise that I've renewed my passport since I got that last visa.
Oh, no.
So whilst I did have a visa, I did not have the correct
passport
for it to go with it.
Oh, no.
So quickly quickly applied for a new visa. That didn't come in by the time the flight left. It didn't come in by the time the next flight, the last flight of that day left. Yes, spent a very nice half a day in Keflavik walking around. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Mm. You can walk from the airport. There's a walkway, like a cycle path and a walking track.
Cool.
From the airport out to this little fishing village about 40 minutes away. So I went for a lovely walk. It's gorgeous.
Sounds lovely.
Decided that I would carry on to Canada. So booked a flight the next day, paid for a flight the next day. All fine, you would think. Now, another public service announcement. If you miss your flight, your outgoing flight somewhere, your airline will automatically cancel your return flights and not tell you about it and not refund you or let you know. So everything was fine until I went to check in for my return flights and realised that I didn't have any. So I had to purchase new. So I've spent £1 billion. This is the most expensive holiday I've ever been on.
Was it worth it, though?
No.
Oh, no!
I mean, it was nice to see. There were some... I saw some good plays, but I could have gone to London and...
Stayed in a swanky hotel?
Stayed with my brother. Or stayed in the swanky hotel. Anyway, so it was a nice trip. I saw some good plays. I saw an absolutely superb play called The Art of War, which is a new Canadian play about war artists, Canadian war artists. And it was beautifully written, and it's been, you know how something is just on your mind?
Yep.
It's been there since. It was superb. I don't think there was anyone in that audience that didn't cry, wasn't crying at the end. And it wasn't manipulative crying, you know, it wasn't sort of...
Yeah.
Is the thing, but there was a bit where he met up with a photographer, and they were both taken to the liberation of one of the concentration camps, and they're laughing, they're standing outside sort of laughing and joking and raised their cameras to capture the first scenes.
Oh, God.
And then this, I don't know how long this lasts, but it felt like forever. And then rather than take photos, they both just drop, really slowly drop their, he drops his sketch pad down and the photographer, yeah. And you and he just watches. And you're not, you can't see anything, no, you're just watching these two men watching
these living skeletons walk past.
Absolutely, it was, and that's, I mean, that's the point where every, I think everybody just started crying. It was really well done and not
manipulative,
not overplayed, because you didn't see a thing. You just were watching two men watching something else, and the two actors were brilliant. But anyway, those were my that was my Canada trip.
And what news from the cinema? Not obviously, so Macbeth is what news from Fife, but what news from the cinema? What's how's your summer been?
Good.
Have people been well behaved?
Unfortunately for the podcast, but fortunately for me, people have been quite well behaved.
I'm pleased to hear that. That was good.
I don't think I've got any drama to report. The summer's been pretty good. School holidays not great. Downton Abbey. Brilliant.
Oh, right, okay, that's the packing, last, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's the allegedly the last Downton Abbey.
That's something I've never got, I must admit.
It's comforting.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't mind it. You wouldn't like it. Yeah. I think you just hate it the whole
class
thing.
Struggle. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have problems with the writer as well. I find him quite objectionable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He's in a Bond movie where he plays an absolute tool as well.
Is he?
So, yeah. World is not enough.
What year is that? Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
Is that with Toby Stevens? Is the
no? It's the one before that.
Oh,
yeah, The World's Not Enough. Yep. The one with Denise Richards as Christmas Jones.
I love Brosnan.
The Bronholm, as other people call him. Yeah.
The Bronholm era. Talking of Bronholm.
Yes, talking of Brosnan, we should come back to Thursday Murder Club later on. Yeah, because I must admit, I have a great affection for the work of Pierce Brosnan. He's not the best Bond by any means, but I loved, Taffin. Maybe he hasn't been living there. It's one of the greatest moments in all cinema.
I've only ever seen that clip from it.
Oh, you've not seen the film?
Because of Adam and Joe.
Oh gosh, the film's worth seeing for its kind of not very goodness. I've been having a real struggle professionally with the notion of what an artist is.
I'm just going to sit back while
exactly the touch paper and step back. Yeah, I've been having real problems with the notion of what an artist is of late, and it's because I made a film a while back and there were some other artists involved in it who were, you know, sort of very successful artists, and they were talking absolute shite. I was like, they had such powerful opinions on what we were doing, but actually there was the technical stuff underneath it, the really simple process of making a film, they just fundamentally didn't understand how things worked at all, but yet theirs was the great opinion, and there was so much ego in it. I was like, oh my god, this is really good.
You're only just realizing this now?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've been musing it for quite a while.
Yeah.
And like, this is why so many things that are, you know, oh, and the artist led or whatever, it's like, yeah, it's really important, and there are genuinely brilliant artists, of course there are, but I found some, like, I have real problems with the notion of the artist.
The auteur.
The auteur, yeah.
Yeah, I hate the auteur.
Oh, it's just horrible.
Sarah Polley, again, coming back to Sarah Polley, she writes about this really well in Run Towards the Danger. She writes about how 6 years of
the auteur model,
and, yeah, it's absolutely and completely...
Well, these were visual artists with whom I was working, and you know, but they're also supposed to be filmmakers, and I was like, they didn't hee-haw about anything. Anyway, and this was make me think about, you know, actually I really do appreciate popular art. Like a really fine, well-made piece of popular art that is just made to connect to people is the most wonderful thing. And I've come to the conclusion that Mamma Mia might be the greatest film ever made.
Yes!
And one of the reasons is that it's Pierce Brosnan going, "You're gone!" It's like he doesn't fucking care. He just goes for it. And it's like, it's about entertainment, connecting, making people happy. It's like, Go, Pierce Brosnan, go.
Do you know, what? We're only a hop, step and a jump away from you admitting that Andre Rieu is one of the greatest artists of all time. He connects with people.
He brings artist.
He brings joy. He
brings syphilis.
we were so close.
No.
You're quite right, because what you're describing... No, I know you're being facetious, but what
I appreciate that.
What you're describing is...
Yeah, the mass populism like that. Yeah, it's Andre. But I think there's a degree of cynicism.
No, I think you're putting that on him because you hate him. Because you don't like his face and his hair.
Yeah. Have you... this version of Earth Song by Michael Jackson is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
Everybody has moments where what they do is not quite. I'm not saying he's 100% all the time.
It's so bad. But I do believe that a sincere work of art made as a means of entertainment connection is so vital and important. Whereas... You know, a member of my own family who I no longer have anything to do with as well as going on this journey of being the artist. And it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. The price that's taken from other parts of life is just like, it's horrible. So, yeah, I'm really struggling with the notion of an artist. And I'm artistic in what I do, but I don't see myself as the artist in that same way.
But that's okay, isn't it? You're doing a job and that's all right.
Across many fields, yeah.
I think that's fine. I don't think you're a good filmmaker.
Artist.
Or no. I'm sorry. I don't think a person, not you, is a good filmmaker if they also don't look after their team.
Yeah, exactly.
Work well with other people. Yeah. Finish at 5 o'clock because that's the time that they said they were going to finish.
Yeah, there's so much.
I think that there is no piece of art in the world that is worth not having a good working environment. You know, all the films that have come out of horrible working environments and tyrannical directors, it's not worth it.
This is what I come back to again. So I'm doing a lot of work with Estonia these days. I've talked about the Estonian connection before, but I'm now working as part of the team with Just Film Industry Days in the Buff Dark Nights Festival in Tallinn, and it's really brilliant. And I've been on the other side of the desk now as submissions have come in for films that are going for co-production, looking for funding for different bits and bobs. And what you do in your professional life, how you conduct yourself and how you work with other people really does matter. Like, you do hear about, like, people making fundings. No, these are not massive funding decisions, but they are funding decisions of, you know, a few thousand euros or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's about, oh, that person can do this because they've done this before. Oh, actually, last time they were really bad on this, that, or that. So, like, people do remember and... people talk, and it's, you know, for all it's a global industry, you are working within pockets, within things. It's really, really interesting. So it's not so much down the back of the seats as the other side of the seats we're talking about there, but that's been really interesting, that you've got to be who you are and to the best of your ability, which is and I remember a friend who was a theatre director, doesn't do it anymore, when they had a child, suddenly it was like, okay, everyone, we're finishing at 5. We're finishing. I've got to go and get the kids, and we're not going to work at the weekend. Or this, and everyone else is like, "Yeah, this is what we've wanted
we've
for a long time."
You,
exactly,
yeah.
And it's decent work practice. And there's that lovely thing in France as well of, like, not being able to send people work emails after a certain time at night. Which I think. There's a really interesting variation on that, which I've seen, which I really like. It was a very successful TV director that was trying to get involved in stuff we're doing in Estonia, sent an email back, and at the bottom of it said, please don't worry about whatever time this email comes in, just respond in your own time unless it says urgent on it.
I think that's
lovely.
Yeah, I think that's better, because some people prefer to work late at night for flexible working hours than
I mean,
definitely. No, I've seen that quite a lot.
But yes, so in terms of the box office hits and shits this year, there is one film in particular we wanted to talk about, which you saw and hated, which I saw with my family and really enjoyed.
Are we talking about Naked Gun?
We're talking about Naked Gun.
Yes. I didn't... hang on. Because I know you think of films in a binary way. It's either the best film in the world or it's the worst film in the world. So you're trying to put that on me.
Naked Gun is not the best film in the world.
It was broadly fine. I didn't think it was broadly fine. I didn't enjoy it.
The corn dog and coffee gag, come on, that was fantastic.
The only bit that I raised a thin smile was the snowman.
That was unique. That was completely different to anything else. I thought that was excellent.
It wasn't completely different.
But yeah, it was different to the rest of the storytelling in the film.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant anything else that's ever been done. I thought you were giving The Naked Gun a...
A critique of Willow Bumble Station. I loved it. I think if you think about
that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I am glad.
I saw my son loved it. He thought it was the best film he's seen all summer, which was really nice. Because we saw Superman as well, which was...
I really liked Superman.
It was so nice to have a proper superhero movie that was like a comic book. There's that brilliant scene where he goes back home for hot chocolate with the partner, with what you call her, and Amy Adams played her in the last one. Lois Lane is there's that scene when he goes back home to have hot chocolate, and Lois Lane makes him. And in the background, there's a bunch of people fighting an interdimensional squid.
Oh yeah,
and it's really funny. He's like, I'm really sad, and there's like in the background. I thought that's excellent. It was really proper comic book fun.
I am hard related to the bit where he smashes through 3 or 4 buildings, smashes up an entire block of apartment block, and into somebody's office, destroys everything because somebody took his dog.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
That was very good.
Can relate.
No, I thought that was great. But Naked Gun, I really enjoyed. I thought it was exactly what was needed at this moment in time in terms of where I was sitting, like, emotionally.
Well, that is a very good point, and a big plus for it is that we don't get many...
Comedies,
yeah. Many silly comedies that trouble the box office, and this very much did trouble the box office, and it didn't play so well at Campbelltown Picture House, but I wasn't expecting it to, but it was... And do you know what this makes it one of the best films of the year? Because it was 88 minutes long. Under 90 minutes long.
Goodness me, that is a charm.
88 mins, yeah.
Wow.
So take heed.
Mm. So let's come then on to talk about something which didn't trouble the box office because it never went bloody near the box office.
Well, it troubled other people's box offices.
Really?
Yeah. The Thursday Murder Club, which has a cast of a brilliant cast, very popular book, very good. I enjoyed the book, absolutely fine. It's not for you, don't read it. But it, Richard Osman.
I like him a lot. I think he's
wonderful. Like the way that he writes. That is, I mean, if we're talking about
populism,
brilliant. He is very smart.
Such a clever man.
And he knows exactly...
He's also kind.
He seems like a nice
guy.
That's
what I like about him.
Well, this is why this was a big disappointment. And it's not his. He didn't make these decisions.
No.
But so it went to Netflix, and we were... Originally, we, the cinema industry, were very keen to play it because it, it's got...
Multi-million bestseller.
Yeah, it's got Mirren, it's got Kingsley, it's got Bronon, it's got... other people.
Steven Spielberg was an exec.
Yeah, and Chris Columbus, that one, was directing, and it had all the hallmarks of my Wednesday afternoon absolute box office gold. It would have been huge. But it was going straight to Netflix. So that was the first annoyance, that it was going straight to Netflix. Then it was going to be released, and it was released in a small... number of cinemas, which is of course their prerogative, but we weren't among the cinemas that was allowed to release it. So it was a narrow release, and it was a case of...
Why did they do that? Is it to make the Oscars eligible?
Yes, I think so. I don't know for this one. I'd be interested to know exactly. What? Now, Richard Osman has spoken about this on The Rest Is Entertainment, but he's sort of gone from saying, look, it's Netflix's prerogative, which of course it is, you know, if they're going to spend all this money on the film, but and if they want to put it straight to Netflix, that's fine. And if they don't want to release it into cinemas, I mean, that's annoying, but it's also fine. But then it made a shit ton of money in cinemas because it was released in small places and did great box office and has been one of the big smashes for the cinemas that it didn't go into. It went into Picture House Cinemas and Everyman Cinemas, I think. But to be... I don't know how to phrase it without... it's their decision. It's nothing to do with me. It's annoying as a small independent cinema who would have really needed that film because we just need those kind of films.
Yeah.
And it's annoying when there's something...
your main audience.
Yeah.
Your audience that spends.
Yes and no. So it's my audience that reliably come in.
Okay.
They don't spend any money.
Okay.
But
they bring their own sandwiches.
They bring a little Tupperware. But I sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying they don't spend at all. They spend them. So it was a real disappointment. And release windows are also a real disappointment. And obviously I'm going to now, I'm going to sound a little bit hypocritical because I do like a long, would like a long release window. So the time between something coming out in the cinema and something going on to streaming. But in the next breath, I'm going to say for something like Thursday Murder Club, I'd have taken that, I think it was a week or 2 weeks that it was in cinemas before it came out on Netflix. I'd have taken it because I would know that a lot of the audience that are going to see that sort of film, they've not got their smart TV hooked up to Netflix at home.
No, they have to have someone explain that to do it for them.
Yeah. Yes, so it was disappointing, and some of the way that Richard Osman spoke about it on The Rest Is Entertainment was also a little bit disappointing because he was in one breath sort of saying, look, this is the business model that they've got and it works financially for them, but then in the next breath talking about how amazing it was that it was going into cinemas and that it was...
this
like
is the...
breaking box office records in certain cinemas.
Yeah.
And it was just irksome to be like on the outside of that going, yeah, we asked. And I can guarantee you every cinema that is got the audience that I've got asked whether they could play that film.
Yeah.
It's not. And it was a flat no.
We're encountering this with Estonia as well. We're actually going to do a panel discussion around this of what are release windows and how is that affecting the distance between. I mean, this is a slightly different question to the release window because it's their model. They chose to go blasting out, but there's according to one article I've been reading in research for that, it's 45 days between screenings and then home release.
That feels a bit long.
It used to be 90 days.
Well, you know, when we were kids, it was 3 years or something. But I don't know. I actually don't know if there's a universal release window now. It feels pretty arbitrary. Yeah. So we something.
It depends
else.
On the studio, I think, a lot of the time.
Oh, it must do. Yeah, it must do. There's the UK Cinema Association will be able to help you on what's going on with release windows.
So it's really interesting talking about this film, but. And they're in this way, but is the film any good?
Oh, it's fucking awful. Right, I was so...
My mum and dad loved it. They absolutely loved it.
That's really good.
That's someone 83 and 78 years old.
That's really good. I'd be fascinated for you to watch it because I was looking forward to it. You know, I love that kind of thing. And I love the cast.
I can't read stuff like that because I always think about, well, how do I murder someone after reading this? I get a bit obsessed with it. But I
settled in, you know, I got my snacks already, I loaded it up, and I was like, this is going to pass the next hour and 45 minutes, and I'm going to be
in
delighted.
Bliss,
And I could not, this is why I think I'd really like you to watch it, I couldn't figure out what was wrong. It was, it did not work.
Wow.
And
Chris Columbus is an incredible director of popular cinema as well.
Exactly, a popular guy. All the actors are fun to watch. Lovely.
Yeah.
This script writer, so Katie Wicks had her hand in.
Oh, wow.
She was one of the writers
on
the script.
That's cool.
I love Katie Wicks.
Wow.
I think she's very smart, she's very intelligent. I don't know what happened, but it's bad. sort of shockingly bad as in surprisingly bad, not shockingly bad as in it's awful. You know, it's obviously watchable and your parents enjoyed it.
But this is the thing, like, so what is this difference between the viewing experience for, is it, I don't know, what is it, expectation, or is it they like it because they've been, oh yeah, I like that.
But I was fully on board.
I don't understand that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'll maybe watch it again. We'll talk about it next time.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I know you're a busy man and you're not going to enjoy it.
But my wife wants to see it as well.
George, but I'd be really interested if you can analyse, because I don't have the eye that you've got for technical, not technical, but, you know, for story structure. I think there's something wrong with the way that it's pace. There's a sort of weird bit on a bus where they just get them to swear, which obviously you want, because it's funny to see Helen Mirren swear.
Yeah, yeah,
That, and it feels like oh shit, we haven't had a bit where Helen Mirren swears.
All right, okay.
Let's do this short scene on a bus where they swear, and then you're like,
should have got Marion Margulies for that. That should fart and then go away again.
it was weird. Everyone acted well, apart from David Tennant, weirdly.
Oh, what's he doing in it?
He's
with his teeth.
David Tennant, I think, is a phenomenal actor.
His teeth are brilliant. I mean, he's a good, very fine
actor.
Stop
it, don't you be mean about David Tennant.
No, David McDonald's a lovely man, I'm sure.
David McDonald's.
Aye.
It's weird. Right, well, I think we should come back to it when you've watched it.
Okay, that's a good one.
Because I'd be delighted.
Are there other things which we must discuss?
I'm getting my list.
I've got my list.
So I'm crossing off. Yeah. I had weapons on my list, but that moment has passed. It's very good. You should watch it.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Excellent.
It's the vampire one, isn't it?
It's not vampire, but it is a horror.
Oh.
I can't tell you what kind.
Okay, no, that's fine. I'm looking forward to it.
It's very good.
Yeah, weapons is what I want to see. And there's also...
The Ballad of Wallace Island.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I liked it.
It's my favourite film of the year, and... shot into my top three favourite films of all time.
Being which, number one and two being?
Dean Spanley and The Quiet Girl.
Oh, The Quiet Girl's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That really is good.
Ballad of Wallace Island, actually, that is not so much populist, but I have very much an eye on the audience. This is a film made for the audience.
It's made for her. It's made for us.
It's made for me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate Tim Key making a film directly for me.
It was Mendy that produced it. I can't remember his surname. Rupert that produced it also produced Brian and Charles. And I prefer Brian and Charles.
Okay. There's a great little film just about to come out, actually. A Scottish film called I Swear. Have you seen this?
I cannot wait to see that film.
Me too.
Have you seen the documentary about John's life originally?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's one of the best documentaries you can ever see. It's phenomenal. It's from 1990s or early 2000s. Oh, God, it's one that stays with you forever. It's one of my pals and I talk about. And so to see him, his life being treated as a success as it is...
Mm.
I'm so happy for that guy. I don't think I'll be able to stop crying.
Oh, I cried at the trailer.
Yeah, me too.
Just basically, I think it was more about my state of mind at the time, but I had a little cry.
Shirley Henderson, fantastic actor.
Yeah, I'm really looking
best
forward to it.
Best toilet ghost ever.
Yes. I do understand that reference. So, do you want to quickly, because we've been going on for... ages.
Sorry, listener.
We'll just do a quick cinema snacks, because I'd forgotten something when you asked me about any incidents at the cinema. I've forgotten our new cinema snack, Russian roulette. Not Russian roulette. Cinema snack.
Lots of brains over the back seats.
So we have a customer.
Who shall remain nameless.
Who shall remain nameless and featureless. But they have started bringing in. They have been going on a weight loss journey.
Good on
them. Using various helping.
What was Ozempic and things like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. Mm-hmm. But what this means is that their diet has become extraordinary, and it seems that they choose to eat their main meals. In Campbell, it feels like.
Oh my god!
They always bring their own snacks, and they always announce loudly that they've got their own snacks. And Okay, fine. But it's escalated. So the last time that they're
in... steak pie.
It's worse than steak pie. So for some reason, part of this part of the diet that they've been on involves eating a lot of tinned mackerel.
Oh, no.
So we've had sardines, we've had mackerel. There's always some sort of fish in tomato sauce. You know, there's little cans that I give to the dog once every 2 weeks to make his coat all glossy.
Yeah.
So those. There's been an entire mango, which has been sort of clawed into, peeled, and then just kind of eaten as 'twere an apple.
Did they leave the stone behind?
They leave everything behind.
Oh, wow.
So this is, I mean, it's quite entertaining that they leave it behind so that we can see what's going on. And we had another customer come out. They weren't complaining, but they just said, I have never seen somebody open a can of tuna in the cinema and eat it with their hands.
Oh my god!
And we're like, okay, we know who that is. We know exactly who that is. So lots of plums as well. So you can plums, carrot sticks, raw mushrooms.
Do you think they're just a fan of this podcast and want to be featured in it?
I really hope not. It's extraordinary.
That's remarkable.
I know. So we're taking... I mean, it's become a game. The canned fish is not ideal because it smells.
No, it's hoofing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rank,
yeah. But anything that doesn't smell, then I'm kind of here for it, entertainment-wise. Mary's not having any of it. But yeah.
I'm with you, Mary.
Yeah. So please stop eating fish in the cinema.
With your bare hands.
With your bare hands. Please feel free to bring alarming snacks, but non-stinky ones.
Non-stinky
or the noisy ones. Like, because the mango, there was a lot of...
Oh.
You don't want to be sitting watching something.
Oh, no.
The person behind you...
Oh, no. Hannibal Lecter's behind me.
Sorry, Bobby. So that's cinema snacks. I'll keep you updated. Right. Shall we wind down?
Let us do. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much. If you would like to get in contact with us, please email downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com, or we can be found on Facebook, Instagram, full stop.
Yeah. And we can try and reach out to other cinemas and see if we've got details for that at some point. And yeah.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.